This first Game of Thrones Season 6 podcast episode of Game of Owns is brought to you by MacWeldon.com.
MacWeldon is better than what you're wearing right now. Unless, of course, you're like Melisandre and not wearing anything right now.
Go to MacWeldon.com and get 20% off using promo code
Thrones.
I'd like some mutton.
What?
It's great just seeing all the reaction again on social media, having people send in their owns, which of course we'll get to later on in the week. But the creativity, the juices were flowing, and there were some that I read. I shared a few with Hannah before we sat down to record, and she was laughing a good amount and gasping.
We're wading through the icy cold waters north of Winterfell of our thoughts right now.
I feel like all of my expectations for this first episode and what we've been thinking that the season's going to be, I think that definitely this first episode is starting to confirm the suspicions that this is going to be the best season yet.
Coming into this season, I didn't really know what to expect because, as we've brought up before, for those of us who have spent so much time being sullied, this was a fresh start. And I really felt that the flow of the episode was great. And I was waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting for that moment. And of course, it came at the end. Where you as
Prince Doran? Can they stab?
Yeah, lots of surprises.
Was that not the moment for you?
That was the other moment.
No, that's good. That's good. We're starting on a high note. Then, if Micah wasn't impressed by the Prince of Doran getting stabbed by his family,
how about Trystane though? Really? Did that surprise you, Micah?
Aerial Hota. I mean, come on.
I know. No, that was.
That dug deep. I'm not forgiving them for that.
He polishes his staff nightly.
Anyway, yeah, we got this big shocking moment at the end of the episode, and as we've talked about, just the influx of response that we got from people on social media and Twitter, Facebook, emails, comments on Watchers, this season is off to a great start.
You texted, there's a lot of owns. Or you said something about there being a fuck ton.
I said
of
a fuck ton.
You were not wrong.
And then I corrected myself because I didn't want to curse in front of Hannah, but I just did again.
Thanks, Micah.
Oh, man. So it's come to us. The time just sort of ticked by. Game of Thrones has been trending on Twitter all day.
This episode is going to be another one of those that you just want to keep rewatching for all of the surprise moments. Like, I think
except
I caught
maybe the end. I have a feeling some people might not like the end.
I think you're a little hard on
depends
the end
on
there.
Who you ask.
Hey, she's 400 myself. Years old. She's looking great.
She looks
looking
pretty good.
Great. Well, we spent the last few days trying to get things in order, and part of getting things in order, which is different now than any season we've had in the past, is we have a clothing sponsor now. So it feels a little bit more legit than it has before.
Mack Weldon is reinventing men's basics. So,
and apparently they're anti-White Walker, which
was that included in your package as well? I thought that was a nice
You got the anti-White Walker stuff? Yeah. I got the anti-Dornishman stuff.
I'm not sure how well it works, but
I guess we'll find out.
We all got some. We had the opportunity to try it out over the weekend. I wore mine to my birthday name day celebrations, which ended up being one of the best parties I can remember having. Best night of my life, I think I threw around. So Mack Weldon is some great stuff. I'm sure you guys have similar stories, even though it wasn't your name day.
I will say we did have a missed opportunity to all buy matching clothes. We definitely
wait,
messed
I thought
up
that we
on
were.
That
I got the same black t-shirt that I always get.
Oh, I got the blue. I got the blue. I'm sorry.
I got the blue too.
Blue.
So
wait, okay.
I got a blue one too. You. I got a blue one too.
We
I did.
Okay, yeah.
Look at
Zach
that.
Is like the last, the late twin, the last
we
minute
matched.
Twin.
I now have 50 black t-shirts.
It was so easy to order. You accidentally ordered 50.
Well, you know, if you don't like one of them, They'll give you a refund. You can keep it.
One thing that did come to mind, guys, when I was watching that end scene of this first episode is that Melisandre, she would have looked great in some Mack Weldon. And I can't think of a better name of an organization to have as a sponsor, because you could take that name, Sir Mack of House Weldon. I mean, just doesn't it have a nice ring to it, though?
I'd pledge my sword.
We're obviously very happy and excited to be doing this, and this is a great night, and hats off to Mack Weldon for sponsoring our first episode of the sixth season. And if you love our podcast, do us a favor. If you're in the market for great clothing, better than what you're wearing,
go to mackweldon.com and get 20% off using promo code THRONES.
That's THRONES, not owns. You guys thought we'd use owns, didn't you?
Next time.
Well, Hannah, you wouldn't have been the only person that pledged their sword tonight.
I don't even know how to talk about it. It was my favorite scene, because I love Sansa so much. But after Sansa and Theon's little chase through the woods, and we kind of knew that this was coming, I think.
We've seen a little bit of it,
and we all had kind of guessed that Brienne was going to show up. And she did just in the nick of time.
Which was surprising to me, because I feel like on Game of Thrones, nobody gets that kind of reprieve.
But Sansa Stark.
And there was Brienne riding in on her horse with Podrick.
And can we celebrate Podrick's training with Brienne paying off?
I was so impressed with him.
How about Reek? Theon.
Yeah.
Whatever you want to call him this week. I mean, he had a bit of a redemptive moment there where he
stabbed
the Bolton man.
Yeah, and even before that, when he stands in front of them to save Sansa.
Yeah.
To try to distract them. I was like,
I need to watch the episode right now. I need to watch it. I want to watch it again. I have to watch that.
Watch his heroism, and then Sansa really didn't move at all from where she was.
In all fairness, I mean, where could she really have gone in that amount of time?
Nowhere. That the Nowhere. Dogs couldn't have found her, yeah.
I had the sound turned up so loud in my living room when I was watching this. I was sitting right in front of the TV, and my dog Strike, who is a direwolf, was sitting nearby. And when those hounds started barking, he was just into it. He was turning his head, questioning things.
I wonder what they're saying.
Yeah, what are they saying?
I think they were angry, or they were telling each other jokes. It was one of the two, because he was interested but a little affronted.
Well, so they take care of these Bolton men, and then the most beautiful moment of the episode when Brienne kneels for Sansa, and then Sansa tries to say the oath back, but she can't remember all of what
House
it is.
Lemonwood.
Who remembers it? Lemonwoody. Who knows it?
God, he studies so hard, you know. He practices.
Wait, hang on. Seriously, real talk. It wasn't Theon also helping with her?
No, it was Podrick.
Oh, Theon nodded, right?
Theon said, do it.
Yeah.
Okay.
He kind of advised her for a second there, which I thought was so cool.
Yeah, she looked at him like, should I take her on?
Well, which she looked cool. at him like, we've known each other since we were kids, and this person is pledging her sword to me.
She
looks
so regal.
Theon knows
that
they have no chance otherwise of surviving. It's such an obvious yes. Hell yes, in fact.
I know.
I'm surprised Sansa didn't do like a whoop right then and there. But
well, you could kind of see their little smiles. So like, they say the oath back to each other, and Sansa looks so regal and beautiful and perfect.
Yeah,
and
she was great.
She has,
so good.
I just feel like she's starting to come into her own a little bit in that moment. It just felt like a very grown up thing for her to do.
Do you see and her then, mom in her at all there?
Yeah, well, and her dad, like her whole family. And so
that's true.
But I saw there was a little smile on her face and a little smile on Brienne's face. And I was just so happy, because you just. What a match made in heaven.
It was a throwback to the moment when she pledged
with Cat
to Catelyn. Yeah.
I was the whole time just thinking she's saying the same oath back that her mother spoke. It was just, we don't get moments like that very often. And that's one thing that this opening episode, which I'm very much in love with Two Swords from season 4, the opening episode from season 4. But I did have some, there was things in this episode. I know that we've been so excited and full of, because we should be. This is nuts. And we're literally recording this minutes after all is said and done. And it just sort of came. Do you guys know how it just kind of crept up? Like, it's half hour until the episode airs. And then all of a sudden, oh, it's online right now. And then it's credits. We have hundreds of owns coming in. It just kind of all happens so quickly. And I don't know, I kind of feel like we're in a different place in time, like you said, Hannah. Like we're sort of like we're it's everything's different now that we've seen the continuation of the stuff that was left us hanging off of a cliff, left us leaping over a wall in Winterfell for the past year, basically. Mm-hmm. And with what we're talking about now, something that I don't know, it just became it stuck out to me so much, this sequence with Theon and Sansa, and it gave us something that we normally never get in Game of Thrones. I remember when Brienne and Sansa looked at each other the last time, and we hoped that there would be a good moment, but she was with Littlefinger, and it actually ended up ending quite poorly. Like, I knew that the oath was going to, you know, it felt that it was going to happen this way, and it was one of the most sort of rewarding moments that I've ever seen in the TV show, and it made me feel more than I've felt from watching a TV show before. It all came together. The music, the visuals.
The acting. I mean, all of it.
Yeah, Brienne must really be on top of the world right now. I mean, she just avenged Renly's death and it took care of Stannis. She happens upon essentially the search party for Sansa, is able to intervene at the perfect moment and succeed. Although it wasn't easy, even with Oathkeeper, her Valyrian steel sword, it wasn't altogether that easy. She got some damage taken in there, but she did it, and now she's able to pledge her service to Sansa, and Sansa accepts, which went 100% better than it did last time she offered, and they're together now, which is great, because honestly I was terrified for Sansa this entire time, you know, as they're running through the woods and everything, and now I finally feel like I can breathe an exhale of relief.
I was actually scared for Theon, to be honest, right after the moment where he saves Podrick.
Yeah.
I thought he was going to get it in some way, shape, or form. So I'm actually glad that Theon, even though I picked him in my death pool last episode.
And everyone else. Right?
Yeah. I clearly should have picked somebody from Dorne, which I failed to do.
Jeez. But, Jesus. Do you guys think they got our memos about how we didn't like Dorne last season and then just decided to do away with it? Is that because of us?
I think they decided to re-up on the Dorne and just...
Yeah. Well, now all of a sudden I care about Dorne. Honestly, well, I was not expecting that at all.
What I cared about in Dorne was Prince Doran, Alexander Siddig, and now he's...
Wondering how that affected you.
In a bloody pool. I really felt real bad about it, because on the one hand, you're like, he got this death that was coming to him because he's essentially... I want to say a Ned Stark, although that's not necessarily a fair comparison, because Ned was more of a man of action, I think, than Durand. But ultimately, pure intention so far as we're aware, and, you know, he was killed, he was betrayed for his death. So let's just compare the two that way. And it makes me think quite fondly of the character of Durand in the show. That said, I love the actor Alexander Siddig, and he was probably only in 5 episodes ever, so I'm actually quite upset. But, you know, Dorne really shaking shit up with the sand snakes in this episode. Trystane, seeing Doran get it and then seeing Trystane get it in the same episode, and like the entire scene was like a minute long for both of them. I don't know. It was shocking. It was not a completely unexpected death, but it was so awesome to really actually see that happen. I just love that the show can still surprise us. And I'm sure the surprises won't stop coming.
I was definitely shocked. And yeah. I think that it was set up in much the same way that Myrcella's death was set up, in that Ilaria was very comforting to her initially. And she was very much the same way with Prince Durant. She's helping him up the steps and into his chair. And then all of a sudden, once the note comes that Myrcella is dead, they immediately go into attack mode. And honestly, their rationale for what they were doing, I think some people, at least from what I saw in response on social media, they were understanding of that, and they didn't have a terrible argument. They were saying, you sat by when Elia was killed, you sat by when Oberyn was killed, and you chose to do nothing. You just sit, and you're not a very active leader. And not saying that he deserved what he got, but there you could understand the motive. You could understand where they were coming from.
Can we say the same for the Men of the Night's Watch and Jon? And the same thing happened to him in the just the previous episode.
Well, they're faulting him for his action, for letting the wildlings through.
What's worse, action or inaction?
It's a good question.
What is the path? Who gets to make that decision?
Exactly. And it's not necessarily right even who has the right to judge. It's who does judge, because the people
who does judge. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what the show's all about. So you have somebody like Doran who simply doesn't belong in this world, because you're not doing the kind of stuff that the winners are doing.
Well, it's definitely not in the show's world.
I think it's more, though, that Ilaria and the Sand Snakes knew what was going to be the result of him reading that piece of parchment. It would have been their death. So in that moment, they recognized either they had to act or they would be dead.
I mean, it was altogether quite smart. Cruel, though, as he's laying dying, telling him about how all of his men hate him. And, you know, he doesn't even know how few men are still actually loyal to him.
Yeah.
That was a little icing on the cake there, because
it was a vengeful moment.
It was a fatal blow. It was a fatal knife wound into what seemed to be the heart. And he's bleeding out, and she's telling him how pathetic and terrible he is. Like,
and that his son is weak.
Yeah, and that his son is weak and sure to die.
And dying soon.
Hello. Yeah. You know, the new villain. Everybody.
It was just after we were watching him walk, too.
Oh, yeah, right?
I should have known. With Prince Doran walking, like, this isn't going to end well.
You're like, this is hopeful. He's upward mobility. It's
look
great.
At him. He looks like, yeah, he looks, you know.
He's going places.
Well, he's not going anywhere.
At least in my mind, somebody of the stature and the strength of Aryo Hota does not just go down like that.
No.
So that death was a little bit suspect to me.
What was the purpose of Aryo and Prince Doran? Why were they in the show?
Only to show, maybe it's all about the reign of Ilaria Sand, and it's like, let's show what came before.
I'm not sure, though.
Why were they here? Because now they're dead. They're not in the show anymore.
No.
It's funny, though, when Prince Doran was lying there and he said, my son, I thought he was going to say Quentin for a second. And then blow everybody's mind.
I did like them talking about Oberyn in the beginning, though, before they kind of started talking smack about how they talked about how he really lived and he was this adventurer. And I was like, oh, that's a nice little shout out to a character that we really loved. And then everything went south.
Weak men will never rule Doran again, she said. And then two of the Sand Snakes argued over who got to kill the
kid. Greedy bitch. You know that?
Now, Hannah and I were discussing this before we recorded, but how did the Sand Snakes find Tristane?
I mean, weren't they all on the dock as the ship was departing with him on it?
They had to have followed the ship.
I assume they followed or like stowed away or something.
And he wasn't being, so far as we're aware, held captive in any way. I mean, he was sort of on his own, I guess, still out on a boat, still docked in the harbor when...
Looked like he was making the eyepiece for Marcella, most likely.
Oh, right. Of course.
Oh, yeah.
For her funeral.
And he was like, I don't want to.
Because he loved her.
That's so sad.
Yeah.
I know.
They kind of just kept him out there, but...
So he's dead, too. Why was Tristane in the show?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. I thought he was going to be... We had talked about this before. I thought he was going to be a pawn for the Lannisters, almost. I thought that they were going to use him, and now they don't get to.
And now knowing that, I mean, Ilaria has no love for him, there would not have been much of a story there anyway. No use as a hostage to anyone living in Dorne, because only Doran, it seems, cared about the boy. Now he's gone.
So who is now in charge of one of the Seven Kingdoms, Dorne? And what is their motivation? That's the wild card here. I'm just, you know, this kind of came out of where, you know, what role does Dorne play now? If Prince Doran isn't being political and strategizing, what's the plan here?
Right.
That's a great question.
Yeah, and I don't think it's something that any of us really thought about.
It's interesting,
going into
right?
this.
And is Ilaria's need for revenge been fulfilled at this point, or is she going to look to continue her quest? I don't even know if it's for power.
What is it?
It seems like it's just revenge, pure revenge for what happened to Oberyn, what happened to Elia at one point, which still, despite most of the people being dead, the mountain is still alive in some form. So, yeah, you have a wild card now out in Dorne, and who's going to rise to take the place of Prince Doran?
Are we supposed to be like, how, like, what the sand snakes in Ilaria? Like, are we supposed to be scared of them or be fearful of what they're going to do? Because, I mean, do you guys feel that way?
Yeah, I feel
you
like small-time like crooks. Like, they kill...
Like, what's the deal? What's happening here?
They use, you know? They use deceit to kill. They use, you know, and it's kind of like, okay, they're different tactics, equally valid, apparently. But it's not... I can't see them as being this... They're not great strategists. They're acting on impulse.
Right.
George wrote this, like, books in. He introduced a whole new family, a whole new kingdom. And these women were naturally... seated in places of power, and it made sense.
Yeah.
They were fucking badasses, all of them.
I think that we're just going to have to see the direction that the story runners take the Dorne storyline now, with Prince Doran having been killed in this first episode. I don't know that we can even think about the correct answers at this point.
Mm.
It is vastly different from the books and the development of many members of the Martell family. And I think from reading the books, there's a lot of excitement surrounding those characters. So to see how the story has shifted in just the first episode of this season may leave some people a little bit upset.
Mm.
But it does keep us guessing.
Yeah, I mean, we're gonna have a lot to talk about, I think, over the next couple
of
days.
I don't think a lot of it's set in yet because it was mixed in with all the other beautiful stuff, you know, Theon and Sansa and Brienne and Podrick.
Cersei and Jaime.
And honestly, the best Daenerys scene that I've ever seen.
Ooh. I loved that.
Stiff competition, I would say.
I know. She has some really great moments, but Emilia Clarke brought it.
I loved how they were just talking crap about her. And she is still walking with her head held high, kind of giving them these weird side looks. And the whole time I was just like, when is she going to say something? Like, what's the moment when she's going to talk back to them?
And yeah. It's the Dracarys moment of this episode, but there was fewer fires. But yeah, it's always a question when she's going to unleash, not just that she understands them.
Drop some knowledge.
Yeah, drop some knowledge. And her identity. And that's kind of the... interesting and yet altogether terrifying thing is you don't know what her value is to these people. And this other Cal, Moro, was it? I thought it was obviously a very interesting character because, and the way the conversation is written, and mad props to David J. Peterson for the language in this episode, the back and forths and everything, it just seemed real natural, real realistic, the way that they're conversing, and she's sort of meeting him, able to say her full name in Dothraki, which is, hey, that super awesome. But it teeters between him going to basically take her for his own and spend the night raping her, and, you know, who knows what else after that. And essentially, you know, she tells him who she is and you're like, oh shit, this will be great. But it actually doesn't mean anything to him until she brings in the Khal Drogo connection that she's a widow.
Right.
And it just turns out that Khal Moro's been brushing up on his Dothraki like religious practices and understands the weight culturally of who she is, and then doesn't lay a hand on her. So it's odd, but not altogether different than anything else we've seen in Westeros or Essos, where you can't necessarily predict what the crucial piece will be that saves your life, but you play every card you can until you're stopped, and hopefully one of them, you know, sticks.
I thought it was weird from that. Maybe weird isn't the right word, but from that exchange about this taking her to this widow camp where all the widows of all the different cows like go to hang out.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't know. I don't really understand.
Well, that was in the first book. I remember reading all about the Dash Kaleen because Dany,
right.
It's obviously a big deal, but she's talking about them early on.
It is.
Yeah. And so I was actually pleased to see that be brought up. It's anybody's guess if she actually ends up all the way there and meets right. any of these other Khal's widows. But I mean, it's kind of, we know that she's destined for much greater things than hanging around a water cooler with.
Look, can we just talk about how good all of this felt?
It was great.
The establishing shots, walking into the Dothraki camp, seeing the animals skinned and stuck on spits and preparing to be roasted, and just and the music and David's languages, a lot of how the Blood Riders kind of sort of spoke to one another. All of it was just very familiar, atmospheric, and I just felt like this is a much more polished version of what we got in the first two seasons. and it was presented so well. The environments were so crisp and detailed. There were so many extras. It felt like we were going back in time, but it also felt very, you know, like it's cool to go into a new season and for it to really, 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 really feel like a new season. And it really, really, really felt like a new season. And this is Daenerys walking with horsemen. This is Daenerys walking with the Dothraki. We've seen this before, but it felt new and it felt great.
Well, and to your point, this being a new season, I think that the end of season 5, more so than the other seasons, really ended on a cliffhanger instead of more of a wrap up. And so I think to be able to be in this new season, but exactly where we left off, because we see, you know, with Dany, with all these characters, we pick up exactly where they left off.
Yeah.
With, you know, Jon still laying on the ground.
Started out with him on the ground. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. And so to make that, these scenes that we had already started to see last season feel even more grander is exciting.
That moment too, when she walks up and first meets Cal Morrow, it was almost very reminiscent of her interacting with a situation that she would have been in back in season 1, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, he has his blood riders there. He has some handmaidens. Mm. So for Dany to be on the other side of that, and he constantly puts her down every single time that she feels like she's gotten a small victory, he sort of squashes whatever sense of hope she seems to have. Even at the very end, when he admits the fact that he can't do anything to the wife of a former Khal and sends her off. But in that moment, in saying that she has to go to Vyas Dothrak, it's a defeating moment for her. You see it in her eyes. She thought she was going to be scot-free and be able to give him, you know, a bunch of horses once she was safely
returned
to Meereen.
That's a good gift. That's cleared up. Now take me back to Meereen and we will, you know, just get you some horses.
See, that's what was so beautiful about these scenes is that we've seen Daenerys interact with these people before, but never with this calm, experienced confidence. Mm-hmm. She had it together. And it was a beauty to watch. When she was saying all of her titles, I, in the moment, watching the show, I thought of her as, this is the Queen of Westeros. Mm. And she's displaced right now. She is not in Westeros, but she is the Queen of Westeros. What a story. She's out here in the same tent that the Sand Snakes trained in season 5, it looked like. And she's taken all of this shade and thrown back deliciously eloquent Dothraki. Right? I don't know.
Remembered it.
But he matches her, though.
She respects the culture, too. She remembers enough of the culture to... It's she's going to need it to survive.
How often do you get a prisoner that you bring into your camp that is not only a queen of et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, but was also a former Dothraki queen?
And she's blonde.
And she's blonde.
And, she's and blonde. A witch.
And a witch.
And a witch.
It is known.
But that, to play off what you were saying, Zach, that moment where Jorah is talking and Daria are kind of going looking for her. And I can't remember who said it, about them wanting to see what the world looks like when she's done conquering it and what the world could be under her rule is something that exactly when we're watching her speak to the Dothraki with such poise and grace and mm-hmm. be in these situations. I mean, absolutely can't wait to see if she's successful, what that means for Westeros and the rest of the world. Really.
I love that episode of CSI Westeros myself.
Oh yeah. I love the moment where they were like, what you were just saying, Anna, and they were like, I can't wait to see a world where she conquers everyone. And then Jorah like slows down. He goes, and he like, it was just, I don't know, it kind of just took me out of the episode for
me
a second,
too.
Right? He slowed down and like looked around to make sure no one was watching and looked at his grayscale and like, he was like, I hope that
that's
I'm around.
So that's so sad.
I think Dario probably knows.
Well, if he didn't before, he knows now.
I was right. Yeah. He was riding a little close to Jorah. I don't know. I still think like if Jorah just reaches out and touches him, he'll get it too. So I hope that doesn't happen.
He slows down and just looks at it and made sure the camera got a close up.
It's looking pretty good. The makeup department did a...
That makes me feel like he's not going to make it. So he's not going to be able to see that.
They're establishing a lot in the first episode, right? I guess that's
what
they
did.
Yeah. So you have
even,
to do.
Took us over to Braavos for a brief minute. We saw Arya getting her butt kicked by the Waif, who is very quickly getting on my shit list.
Yeah, seriously.
Oh, why? Why, Micah? Why is she getting on your shit list for hitting a blind girl repeatedly with a stick?
Yeah,
I'll do it.
Is it not useful training for Arya? I would argue that it's crucial for Arya to separate her senses and learn to be without one of them. I have high confidence that it's a temporary blindness, but I think she's going to learn. There was something very Serio Forel about the waif and her on this episode.
Yeah, I had the same thought.
Yeah. But like, what was that? What is it? Is it just that she's, you know, picking up a skill or, you know, and she's dreadfully incompetent at the start, but we know she'll get better.
I don't know, but I do agree with you that I think that it is going to be really important for her to learn how to listen and for her to learn how to control her emotions and her, I don't know what the right word is, but I think
stick.
I think that she needs to learn control just in general. And so to be able to pick those out specifically, whether it's her learning to listen right now, her learning to whatever she's going to continue to do, I think all of that is going to be incredibly important for her as she continues to turn into this very intense killer. I mean, really, that's what she is.
Can we talk about how pretty Braavos was? And that, do you guys remember that shot of with the Titan in the background just looming?
Yeah, that was a great shot.
That was so cool.
It's really cool.
I agree, though, about Serio. I think that his training will come into play for her specifically and tie the seasons together, right? Going all the way back to season one. That, to me, is what's going to help her ultimately defeat
the waif.
The waif.
I mean, mm-hmm. She had a wooden sword. Now she has a wooden stick, staff. I guess you should call it.
But why is it in public, though? I mean, has she been kicked out of the House of Black and White?
That's what it feels like.
Yeah.
It's almost a public shaming of sorts, right?
Yeah. Like they blinded her and cast her out because she broke the rules so harshly.
Good luck to her kind of thing.
It's weird because they're still investing time and energy to teaching her something. It's a temporary. She's suspended from school, necessarily. It's not quite being expelled. To make that distinction.
Well, what's good walking around blind in a super dark building?
I think that's what it is you know, the way the waif came up to her and for first she asked, are you listening to what they're saying? Then she asks, are they talking to you? Oh, boohoo. You know, so the second part is an emotional attack. Nobody cares about you. Nobody's talking to you. Nobody's saying anything to you because you're nothing, right? But the first part is the crucial part. It's, are you listening? Are you hearing what they're saying? And I think that's the test on this whole thing is, Arya's so into herself here at this moment. Still, she's Arya Stark, you know, first and foremost. That can improve. She needs to learn to take in the world around her, and nothing better will do that than losing her sight and being focused on having to hear to do something as simple as get around. So that is, I think it's all leaning towards a lesson. And the waif, for some reason, I don't know, I like these bad guys, but the waif just, I see it as a very valuable lesson for Arya.
So who are the bad guys?
For
episode one, season six, we've just watched it.
Well,
all the plot points I feel like have been pretty clearly set up. Would you guys agree?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know that there could be a better guy than
Ollie. Sorry.
Well, fuck Ollie. Keep okay. Going.
2016.
Yeah.
Keep going.
That kid.
I thought he was gonna speak up when Thorne was giving his speech.
Yeah. He really just like stood by
my family. Yeah. I'm so glad that he didn't, because I would have just.
I think they're trying.
They
to
probably
hide.
Would have let him speak. You know, they would have like let the boy say no. You don't get to talk.
I couldn't
he
read
was
what
giving
his face.
Trump speech.
I think they're trying to hide his puberty. So if he had spoken, he would have had a deeper voice. I think they're trying to get rid of his lines.
That's a very strange observation.
Yeah. Who knows? That's
we'll see what octave he hits when a ghost bites into him.
We'll see what sticks.
As much as I despise Alzer Thorne, I would have really enjoyed a front row seat to his speech. I thought it was fantastic, but I noticed there weren't any seats available.
There weren't a lot of seats available in that room. You're right about that, Micah.
Micah, did that make you frustrated when you were trying to get tickets for that online?
You know, I didn't know that you could get them online, but now that you tell me this, yeah, I am frustrated.
Micah, you need to try SeatGeek. They've made it easier than ever to buy and sell sports and concert tickets.
Well, then I'll be sure to check them out the next time I want to go to a Thorne concert. Did you know that he moonlights as a
does he play
harp player?
Yes. I was gonna guess. What is the where you bang on
the drums,
the timpani?
No, the music, the xylophone. Or
they don't know if you bang on a xylophone.
I am gonna use SeatGeek to see Night Ranger though. That's kind of the same thing, right? Night Ranger of Sister Christian fame is coming to the House of Blues in a couple weeks.
So. I keep the SeatGeek app on my phone, and I have like you know, there are certain bands. And it's not just bands because I love music, but there are certain things that are very important to me not to miss. Like when the entire bridge crew of Star Trek gets together on a monumental.
Right.
Right. And Eric and I decide we have to go together, but we pick seats at different tiers sometimes and we sit in different places.
That was bungled, but
it was a little bungled, but we didn't use SeatGeek then. And the problem with most services that you use is that there's this annoying fee at the tail end, and it's something that I think we've all just kind of gotten used to, but I went in to buy tickets for a Blue Oyster Cult concert.
I love Blue Oyster Cult. Don't fear the Reaper.
You know, up front, and I feel like everything's been simplified now, and I don't have to worry about where I'm going to buy or sell tickets anymore, and it's just good that there's a place that it's taken care of.
You know, the ticket price that you see on SeatGeek is the full ticket price, start to finish. They're not going to trick you. There's no fees at the end. The coolest thing about it right now is that the listeners of this show get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase.
And I know that our listeners are very passionate about music. They're passionate about sports. Trust me. I see your avatars. I know who you're all fans of. So this is a perfect
Mike is spying on
opportunity for you all to take advantage of. Go ahead, download the SeatGeek app. It's free, and you'll get a $20 rebate on your first ticket purchase.
You download the app, like Micah said. You go into the settings tab, and you click add promo code. And then you enter our promo code, which is OWNS, O-W-N-S. And that gives you your $20 rebate off your first ticket purchase.
So download the free SeatGeek app and enter promo code OWNS today.
Micah, you're so good at that.
I'm telling you, I just really wanted to go see Thorne speak. It felt very much like a presidential campaign speech to me.
It's like a lot back of yelling in,
but
a
we
lot
won't get
lying.
Into that. Let's get back to
Ghost.
This episode.
Micah, you tweeted that someone needed to hug Ghost.
Oh.
I hugged my dog after you tweeted that, buddy.
When he was howling, I mean, the episode starts off with Ghost just
so
howling
good.
In his cage. Mm. Just killed me.
God, it was so good, right? I like that they're taking their time, that it feels really patient there at the wall. It feels better than all the other stuff in the episode.
I was just waiting for John to just open his eyes like in any of those
I don't know
shots.
He looked pretty dead, guys.
I know, but like
he looked pretty dead.
We've been waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting for him to come back for months and years of reading the
years,
book. And it's like I was just waiting for him to open his eyes, like please. I didn't think it was gonna happen,
you know, but. I for all the death and undead that these men have seen at this point, I'm really honestly surprised that he was left out
just there
by the men just there. And
but the sign's still up.
Yeah, the sign's still up. The sign, what is dead may never die. The sign's going to be there forever until somebody takes it down. But John, they just left there. You're kind of supposed to burn the body so that they don't come back as whites. You're kind of supposed to do that. The Night's Watch at this point should know that. And even Davos and the brothers, look, they're protecting John's body for some reason. And it kind of makes sense, which is great. But honestly, they should probably deal with that in some way. You know, Davos doesn't, so far as I'm aware, know that men can be brought back using the power of Raylor.
He knows better than the rest of them, though.
But there's real threat to keeping John's body, his corpse, around. Because, and if the Night's King were anywhere nearby or aware of John's death at this moment, you would think he would just snap his fingers or raise his arms.
If they burned him immediately, then he wouldn't have been able to come back to life.
That's right.
Bingo.
You agree that it's dangerous, though, to have his corpse
absolutely.
There? Because he could
absolutely.
Really come back as something that's not John at all. That's a
absolutely.
White.
Well, yeah, definitely.
So it's a risk that they're partaking in, whether they know the full, you know, consequences.
It's clear, though, that Davos knows more, at least about Melisandre, than everybody else there does. Because there was that question that was asked about what would the Red Woman do against 40 men? And his response was, you haven't seen her do what I've seen her do. And then it goes to the end scene, which I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more about. But I'm not sure why Davos initially is so protective over John. And maybe it's just because of what he's experienced with Stannis, with Shireen, and everything that has happened over the course of last season. He's lost a tremendous amount.
I think so, it's just respect for his body, right?
Yeah, that's probably it. But part of me feels like there's more to it.
It was great to see him be in a position of command and to really, he really just took control of the whole situation, mm-hmm. which I think is exciting. And I think it says a lot about what we're going to see with him this whole season. But I really enjoyed him being in charge.
Did it feel, like I said, better than the rest of the stuff in the show? I feel like I could watch a series about that. The way it was captured, the way it was moving, I could have just watched a bottle episode at Castle Black.
Because we like Davos.
Yeah.
That, and just, it was like Dolores Ed speaking up, becoming an even richer character than before. There was direct references that just, it felt very deep, you know, like rooted in the story. They talked about Beau and Marsh. Like, how often is Beau and Marsh name dropped on mm-hmm. the on the show? Right. You know,
and Yarwick, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
What was that line about Dolores said? It's a sad state of affairs if he's our only chance. I thought that was great.
Didn't he have another one? It was, if you were planning to see tomorrow, yeah. you picked the wrong yep. room.
That was
a I totally agree with you, though. Like, I think that also just says a lot about how much we were looking forward to what these scenes were going to be and how much this episode delivered.
I'd also like to say that I think it clearly points out that there are lines in the story that are clearly stronger than others in yeah. season six.
Because, well, in a way, the mystery is only growing at Castle Black. They have this deadline, you know, by nightfall to exit the room or have the room be seized. But, you know, the idea that this episode's the Red Woman and we have that ending scene with Melisandre. Otherwise, she's not in it too much. But, you know, when she comes upon John's body and says, I saw him in the flames fighting at Winterfell.
Yeah.
You begin to think, okay, she's immediately going to go into, you know, that the prayer and revive him. And, you know, I think it's cool that by the end of the episode, he's still dead. And, you know, it's character building. You know, we didn't know this secret of Melisandre that, you know, essentially her appearance is an illusion, brought on by magic. Like that, I think heightens the possibility because more definitively than ever, you know, Melisandre knows that magic exists. She wields a part of it that's concealing her true appearance and her age and all of that stuff. So I think that there's a lot of hope that I have for her being legit, whereas towards the end of last season, we're wondering just how phony she was. We're asking the questions of, well, you know, what does she really see when she looks in the flames? Is it all parlor trick, the way that she told Selyse in that scene? From the previous season, like what's going on there? But knowing that it's just such a heavy hitting, like there is magic that she's wielding it now, gives me a lot of hope for what's happening.
Mm-hmm. And she says, she comes up to John and she kind of gives him this look and she says, I saw him in the flames fighting at Winterfell. And we're like, yes, you did. Like you totally you saw him fighting
yeah.
at Winterfell.
Yeah, you did. That it must mean.
Yeah,
it must mean it's true.
I think that that's an interesting point, regaining this sense of almost confidence in her that we definitely have lost while she is seeming to lose confidence in herself.
Yeah, just the way that she came across in that particular scene, the sadness in her eyes yeah. is something I don't think we've ever seen from her before, minus her return to Castle Black at the end of last season. Mm-hmm. But I don't think we saw sort of that raw emotion. Her eyes were glistening over and she looked down at
She's
John
vulnerable.
And yeah, for the first time ever, we've seen her really taken down a level in terms of what we're accustomed to. And on the opposite side of that though, Zach, you mentioned just before how Davos is really coming into his own as a leader, both in the moment when he goes to rescue John's body, but then also when he brings up the fact that the people in the room aren't the only ones who owe their lives to Jon Snow. And that's just such a key moment, I thought, in this episode that
yeah. that's
I, rally the
quite
troops.
Honestly, I thought the episode was going to end with the wildlings attacking Castle Black.
Oh, that would have been great.
So Dolorous went to treat with the likes of Tormund and the men who owe Jon for their safe passage. And that's really the shocking thing is here, because these men of the Night's Watch, and I didn't expect a scene like we saw in the mess hall where Alistair and the other officers are trying to justify, or at least announcing what it was that they did, taking the responsibility and saying, we always obey orders and we did this because we needed to, because John made all the wrong choices, etc. Like, I did not expect a scene where they're trying to justify to everyone else, although it seemed like everyone was apart. So who's left?
They had to, though, same thing they're going to be doing in Dorne.
Yeah.
Except
a whole other flavor.
Well, that's only if not everyone is turned, right? I mean, because there aren't many men left at the wall.
Yeah, that's the whole thing.
And I thought a whole heck of a lot of them stabbed him. So I'm surprised. Like, the three guys who weren't there and aren't in the room with Davos now,
there was more people than I had expected to be surprised by that news.
Surprised by that. So it's kind of interesting. But, regarding the wildlings coming to Castle Black, the fact that the Boltons are also thinking about Castle Black, and Brienne and Sansa are possibly headed to Castle Black again. Mm-hmm. It's kind of another, the Castle Black stuff is only beginning, and that's exciting because Jon's there and Melisandre's there, but there's clearly so much more than we ever could have predicted taking place at that, you know, geographic
so good
location.
Too. the sense of space that I felt, like, even in that room, it's so good. And it's not because John was there and he was dead. And honestly, it wasn't because of the stakes. It was the conversations. I thought that Alistair Thorne, his character, was fantastic. He was really, he believed everything that he was saying.
Yes.
He believed it so much. He believed that that is what he had to do. When he was standing at the door treating with Ser Davos.
That was a great scene.
That was just something that, you know what I mean? Like, that was a byproduct of the fact that there are still men standing and they have John's body, you know? Like, it was so authentic. He did not want trouble with Davos.
Mutton.
And Davos. He goes, and some mutton.
That was so great.
What?
And Thorne's trying to save face in front of his, like, he's now the leader of all this. Yeah, he's like, we'll give you some food. Yeah.
You know what he really meant was, we're going to spit in your food.
You hear that, lads? Nothing to fear.
Moving towards the Boltons a little bit, since you mentioned them, something that surprised me a little bit in this episode, and then it was surprising for half a second, and then it wasn't surprising anymore, was when Ramsay was sitting next to Miranda's body. And for a minute there, he's kind of talking about how this is the only girl that could ever hang, and how he's kind of sad. And I was like, thinking that maybe, I didn't think that there could be real repercussions for, like, her dying. And then that was completely shifted when he's like, feed her body to the dogs, and you're like, okay.
It's good meat. Well,
he says your pain will be paid for 1,000 times over, and you're like,
really,
we should be here to see it.
And it's like, but then he also says, buried, burned, this is good meat, feed it to the hounds.
Like, whoa, and I'm like, okay.
Oh, yeah. Shit.
Well, winter is coming, you know.
Winter, hey, you're gonna need to, he's thinking about the hounds. He only has the hounds' welfare at his heart, really. But the Boltons were great. Ramsay was excellent in this episode. Now that he doesn't have his two favorite toys, I'm a lot more comfortable with him existing.
Well, and kind of gave him a little talking to.
Yeah, he did.
He was like, you know, you have been playing games with these people. Sansa was super important key to the North, and
she's gone.
Stannis was easy, but
you lost her.
You know, he was able to easily take down Stannis' army because they were tattered and whatever. I can't remember exactly what Roose says. But
that's a great point.
He says, do you think it would be as easy tackling a fully loaded, for lack of a better word, a Lannister army?
Don't
reckoning will come. It will come. Also, Lady Walda is carrying
scared
a boy.
For Fat Walda. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's hope the maesters are right. And you know that Ramsay's just like, I don't
look
hope
on
that the maesters are right, father. Thank
you.
Like, I'm surprised that he was so submissive instead of just blaringly angry. So, yeah, I'm not sure where it's going to go, but there clearly is a conflict between father and bastard here.
Good.
I mean, it can't end any other way than Ramsay.
Well, naturalized
killing
bastard.
The baby.
Oh, I just meant that he's a bastard, not a bastard. You know what I mean?
He's a bastard, that bastard.
He's a bastard.
Bastard. Mm-hmm. Bloody bastard.
I actually really enjoyed the dialogue between Roose and Ramsay because
me too.
It just showed that Roose is still a very calculating player in this game, and Ramsay just kind of does what he wants when he wants. That scares me, though, for Roose. Not that I, you know, have much of an attachment
care
to the character, but especially that line, just mentioned it about Fat Walda and what that can mean both for her and her child. and Roos potentially, but we'll see what Ramsay decides to do, if anything, to try and get Sansa back.
It's essentially an ultimatum. It's a Bolton ultimatum that it's like, hey, you can get your, you get Sansa back or else, like, you won't have an heir. And we all know what a terrible thing that would be if you didn't have an heir, because my wife, you know, they think she's going to have a boy. It's just, you know, there's very clear, understanding here of what Ramsay must do. He must find Sansa at all costs. And really, you know, although I say I'm more comfortable with him existing now that he's lost Sansa, frankly, he has less to lose now, and it makes him ultimately, I think, more dangerous to be out there and be personally invested, so heavily invested in having her back.
He has less to lose, but the family has more to lose, in my opinion, because with Sansa gone, that opens up a whole can of worms, and they're not going to get support from the Lannisters. They may have to look to the Freys as allies in this case, because Roos brought up the fact Sansa has the power to rally the North against
them.
And
didn't he say that Roos had, I mean, he's got Sansa for Ramsay at a major cost, so this had to work out for them.
I mean, yeah, they basically took him right off from underneath the Lannisters' noses.
Yeah.
Took her right from Lannisters' noses. Yeah,
this is their shot.
Yeah. For all of it to work out this way, it's not very advantageous. I mean, they took care of Stannis, air quotes, but there's so much more left to do.
And how about Stannis saying he wants to, how about Roos saying that he wants to reward the person, well, he says man, mm-hmm. but we know it was a woman who ended up putting an end to Stannis.
Shout out to Brienne.
We watched that finale recently.
I watched it today.
Yeah.
Did you?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
How about
yeah.
just the worst day Stannis has ever had?
I know. I feel so, I love that scene. When Stannis dies.
I'm sad that not just, yeah, like they know he's dead, but there's no, I'm still hoping to see like his body or something. I don't know. I just,
he's dead.
He's
buddy.
Out there. He's still
Stannis
alive.
Stannis is not alive yeah. any longer. Grammar in Westeros is a lot for the worse.
Is that an all-time loss?
Yeah. One.
That's great. Has suffered a great, irreparable loss.
I just want to say again how good it felt. How great these scenes felt. They were very contained. The stuff with Roops and Ramsay, like you said, Micah, it felt, these, they felt, you know, before Roose Bolton was just a person that was alongside Robb Stark in certain scenes. And now Roose Bolton is Roose Bolton. He matters. Ramsay matters. And they carried it. And it worked. And it's been going on for about a season and a half now. And you know, to give them that early of space in that episode in a show that is, I mean, did you guys see all of the, like, not that they matter more than the rest of us, but I saw like a tweet from T-Pain that was the HBO or the Game of Thrones retweeted. He was talking about
T-Pain
how ridiculous he's about to look running out of the airport, trying to get home to watch Game of Thrones on time.
It felt like a
national holiday.
It is.
I think that this is, I mean, we've had 5 seasons under our belt, and this is the point in time when a lot of us paying attention for so long is going to start to pay off. Like you're talking about, these scenes with Roose Bolton are more satisfactory because we know who he is. And so I think that we're only going to get able,
That's
only going to continue to feel that way as different characters that we've talked about meeting up run into each other, and as the world continues to get smaller. I think that everything that we paid attention to over however long is going to really start to pay off and be even more satisfying than, you know, watching season 2 ever was, even for us book readers.
And I also think that they were able to subtly infuse magic into this episode without really having dragons, without really having White Walkers. But you had multiple occasions of witches being mentioned, one time by Cersei when she was talking to Jaime.
That's a real good point.
Dany was referenced to be a witch when she showed up in the Dothraki camp. You had the Red Priestess or at least the Red God, in the Varys and Tyrion scene. And then you also obviously had Melisandre at multiple points
taking
in this episode.
Her necklace and becoming.
Yeah.
Becoming creature.
So they're establishing glamours in the show at this point. I'm not sure if that's going to go any further than Melisandre, but yeah, that's a pretty strong bit of magic right there that they just sort of laid out in front of us. And she revealed herself to herself and gave her, you know, she's going through something right now. She's figuring she really something is. Out. And they really made sure to drive that point in. And I am so intrigued. I thought it was so well done and did not see it coming. Obviously, we know that she's a wild card of a person. So the fact that this is happening to her or that she's doing that isn't that huge of a surprise. But it's not about the surprise. It's not why, you know, there weren't tweets. People weren't speaking up and saying, oh, my God, I can't believe Melisandre's old. People were looking at it themselves and thinking, what is she feeling right now? And how will that matter to the story moving forward? You know, why did she so resolutely turn from that mirror and just crawl into bed?
And does she do that every night? Or was this a moment for her, kind of off of what you're saying, Zach, where she just let go? And what would have happened if somebody walked in there? Hope she locks her door.
She better lock her door.
No, I mean, I think it's just that she shed her... all enchantments. She's herself now. That's her true form. And she is, I think it's like a back to basic sort of thing where she's like trying to make her next move or trying to decide what her next move is going to be, but not in a sinister way, just like being in touch with herself. She's shedding all clothes. Her bullshit, all her layers, all her burdens and clothes.
But she has to, if we think about where she's been. I mean, she just lost Stannis and she thought that he was the be all end all.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I think that she's taking some much needed me time and it's clearly going to pay off. I mean, I think that she's extremely vulnerable. It's more vulnerable than we've ever seen her, which is actually what just what shocks me is the state and how, as you said, Zach, resolutely she turns away and leaves sort of all her, God, what do I want to say? Like disguises, like all the layers of her, all her burdens, all her cares are left on that table. And it's just so she can get her head straight and do what she eventually like we see as her needing to do, which is to figure out a way to bring John back.
I think this
back,
is going to ultimately make her more powerful in the end.
Definitely. But I mean, it can't be that hard after living so many years to develop such an air that puts her on a different level. The people around her, the way she just kind of always had this cool confidence, almost condescending sarcasm. And that was just how she was. And that's why we found it difficult to really, really feel close to her, to get to know her. But now that we see her alone, I think she's sort of admitting, not that she hasn't already up until this point, but I think like a lot of that pride is just going away. And maybe she's realizing herself like, all right, listen, this is the world right now. And bad things are going to start happening at a much greater pace, and I need to do something right.
But only death can pay for life.
I just think it was kind of funny, though, when she first starts looking at herself in the mirror. Because remember when we saw this clip of her starting to undress and all the trailers are like, here we go. Mm-hmm. What's it going to be? Who's she undressing for this time?
And then Yarwick.
Like, in a weird turn of events, she's just like, undressing
actually getting
herself
undressed.
In front of the mirror. Yeah,
we all like, do it.
This was not what I was expecting.
I like that. I like that subversion of that. And I like that, you know, the trailer essentially mentioned at the beginning of the show, Hannah, seeing all these moments from the trailer and being like, oh, there it is. There it is. I like that we saw so many because I like to be surprised by my television. And, you know, I think for the most part, the more of those shots we get early on and have answers for, the more just sheer mystery awaits us. Like the trailers were amazing at hooking us and getting us really super excited. But I would prefer that there's nothing from the back half of the season, at least in any of those trailers for that reason.
Well, there's nothing from Dorne.
There was nothing from Dorne.
Dorne's going to be like that Mirani shipyard. Just going to, they're just going to burn it down. I don't know what's going to happen.
Burn it down like the port of Meereen.
No. When Tyrion says, what does he say?
She's
I guess we're not going
for,
back to yeah. I guess we're not going to go back to Westeros. And we're all like, you think like we've been waiting for her to leave Meereen for so long.
Well, now they have to ride the dragons.
Now they have to ride the dragons.
There's always an answer, but
yeah,
I feel like this particular episode just leaves us with more questions, as it should, right?
It should
as we head into next week and I just am not sure how the satchel is going to fit all the owns that were sent in for this premiere. I was impressed and got many a good laugh reading through the creativity and wisdom of our listeners.
Were you inspired?
I was inspired. I had one good one tonight.
This is your opportunity.
That's all it takes.
Yeah, well, that was a great one.
So in the effort of not having a duplicate own here among ourselves, I just gonna go out and say what my own is of this episode, and it's Jaime Lannister. I talked first, so if yours was Jaime, change it. But no, my own is Jaime Lannister. The line, he's consoling Cersei, fuck prophecy, fuck fate, fuck everyone who isn't us. And you know what? That coming from them, they've lost nearly everything they care about, and Cersei is convinced that it's fate, and she chooses not to blame Jaime, which is for Marcella's death, which is great, but only because it's fated. And Jaime's just like, you know what? We're still the two of us. Like, we need to be the two of us and do us. And I think he's probably right in that, but I admire sort of that interaction between the brother and sister. So own to Jaime and Cersei, I guess.
Fitting.
And you had the Reigns of Castamere playing underneath that scene.
Atmospheric.
It's awesome. I think I'm going to give my own to Tyrion because I already talked about how much I love the Sansa scene, so I'll talk about something else. When he is speaking to that woman in High Valyrian or in Valyrian, and she says, and Varys is like, she thinks, Varys like, she thinks you want to eat her baby. Tyrion's like, well.
He's like gesturing toward her baby and then like, you know, doing that with his hand. That's so funny.
Yeah, I thought that was a really funny moment.
It's like, hey, pardon me, miss. Can I have your child?
Your baby. We'd like this corn in exchange for your baby.
That was good. I think Tyrion's going to be I can't wait to watch him rule Meereen. And I liked the idea that he was kind of wandering around talking about how he can't rule from a tower. And I thought that was really funny, that moment.
Who was watching him, though?
It was the harpy.
Somebody threw the wooden bars or whatever.
Well, Tyrion doesn't want to eat children, so.
Not yet.
Not yet.
Oh, this is tough. Part of me wants to give it to Theon for being so chill, for lack of a better word, when walking through that frozen river. water is cold, man. Listen, water is cold. The first thing I was thinking about was the time I went to the Titanic Museum and put my hand in the Titanic water. I was like, man, yeah, that's tough. But I'm not going to give it to Theon for that. Part of me wants to give it to just the fight scene, just the sequence. Brienne, Podrick, random Bolton men. They were kind of like the putties from Power Rangers. I knew they were going to go down, but they were a little bit more scary. All right, they held their own. And then Sansa almost quoting Catelyn. It was almost too much. You know what? There's going to be so many wonderful owns in our next episode, so it really doesn't matter what I give it to. So I think I'm going to give it to Varys. You walk like a rich person.
That's also really good. He does.
This is tough. I agree. But I'm going to just have to give it to Davos. I already mentioned a lot of the lines that he said before, but just his overall command of the situation, and he clearly believes in something. Hopefully he's able to get out of there with some help from a few friends.
Well, guys, we've just given our owns for the first episode of season 6. How do you feel?
I feel like Melisandre when she sheds her skin and crawls into bed. That's how I feel right now. Now I'm like,
I gave it all I got.
The letdown of like, wow, episode 1 is over. Like, I have stopped screaming about it. Now I need to think about it.
9 more to go.
Yeah.
The countdown is on, Hannah.
Yeah, Micah's already
Get hyped.
Micah's already like counting down when the season's over. And I'm like, got here. Like, barely.
Yeah. Look, before you know it, we're going to be halfway through the season.
I know.
Let us just bask in episode one now. Like, for 1 minute.
Episode 1 may be over and having just aired, but the conversation is just beginning. We gave our owns. We've been collecting your owns, and we're going to continue to collect your owns. So listen up, because here's how to get them to us. You can tweet us at Game of Owns on Twitter, which you should already be following us because Micah does some real magic during during the episodes. Really hilarious stuff. He's a wizard, Harry. And over on Facebook, you can scroll upon our Facebook wall with your owns. That's facebook.com/gameofowns. And you know what? You can also email us. Email your own. So it's three ways. Boom. contact@gameofowns.com to get us your owns. We will put them in the satchel and pull out whichever ones we do on our next episode, which will air at the end of this week.
And still plenty to talk about.
Yeah.
I think on that episode.
There's a lot left over.
Yeah, the mountain.
Yeah, him standing by.
Just the travel through Marine as well. That was just seeing Varys walking around and concerned about, if I'm going to start talking about it, then I'm going to get
There's a lot still to talk about, so.
Yeah, there's a lot to talk about. You guys have sent in an uncountable number of owns. You know it becomes serious when I just went to search.twitter.com and searched Game of Owns. I didn't go to our profile, look at replies, because they were coming in so quickly. We needed something that was live updating. And it's just been fun, as we've been recording, just to read the moments that you guys have shared with one another and the stuff that you thought was interesting enough to write about. And it also feels good to know that a lot of our questions are the same questions that you guys have. You know, it's just, like I said, we're all in this together. And during the season, we make two episodes. So we get to just talk about this again, but more in depth than after, I think, another viewing and more time to let us sink into this, because we haven't even spoken kind words to our loved ones after watching the episode. We've just went into our collective holes and started making this podcast.
Plenty more to look forward to on the next episode. And I mean that in the actual episode too. I don't know if you guys got a chance to see the preview, but Bran was there.
I did see the preview. I'm not sure I saw Bran.
He was the first one.
He was pretty well documented in the preview.
That's why.
Eric was still blocked out. From the episode ending.
No, the credits were going and I was just like, man, and I looked away and then when I looked up, it was already on Danny, I think, but I was like, oh, this is the preview that they do, you know, next week on Game of Thrones. So,
well, Bran aged a little bit too. Maybe that's why you didn't recognize him.
He looks like he showered.
Yeah, I love that we just had a conversation, guys. After all out of all the ones that you listen to at home and out of all the ones that we record for this podcast, we just got to have a conversation for the brand new episode of Game of Thrones.
Yeah. best name day present ever. Nice. Thanks, David. Yeah.
Best so, Eric name day present ever.
This is the first time you've ever listened to Game of Owns.
Sorry.
Welcome to our podcast.
We hope that you stick with us through the entire season.
It's going to happen this way.
And you tell your friends.
Tell your fathers that we're here as well.
Yes. Tell your father I'm here.